Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Banana Island Living Podcasts. I have with me today somebody who will give us a little bit of insight into the mental health situation in Nigeria at the moment. I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Otofe Edebi. He's a consultant psychiatrist and a psychologist with about 15 years' experience in the field of mental health. He obtained a bachelor's degree in medicine and surgery from University of Benin and a master's degree in managerial psychology from the University of Lagos. Now, Dr. Edebi is also a fellow of the Faculty of Psychiatry of the National Postgraduate Medical College of Nigeria. I mean, he's got all the letters that you need. He's a certified NBOSH, whatever that means, IGC, occupational health and safety professional. And he's an alumnus of health management program of the Enterprise Development Center of the Pan-Atlantic University. Dr. Edebi, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really grateful.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here today.
Well, for somebody in the mental health field, you suddenly make me feel happy because as soon as we started talking, you were so cheerful. And yeah. You were singing when we came on. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought, oh, that's a new one. I thought it was all going to be hot and heavy because it's such a heavy topic, isn't it?
Gloomy.
Well, yeah. So thank you. Thank you for bringing some positive energy and some nice vibes to this.
You're welcome.
Now, you're passionate about mental health.
Yes, I am.
You're passionate about mental health issues and you provide advocacy and awareness. Now, this week, and I think even this month, is mental health awareness week.
That's correct.
And there's a lot of talk about this. How has this been sort of taking up in Nigeria, the Mental Health Awareness Week? Is it getting traction in Nigeria or not really?
Oh, yes, it is. I mean, over the years, I would say particularly the last 4 years, the traction in terms of advocacy has been quite encouraging. I mean, we have a large movement of young people, speaking up and very massive movement of young people, particularly. I mean, you can't really change the mindset of the older folks, but let's say people in their late teens all the way to their early 30s, they're speaking up about mental health. And they have made a large part of the advocacy group today in Nigeria as far as mental health is concerned. And the beautiful thing is that they've taken the conversations from Nigeria to the world, about the mental health situation in Nigeria. So it's quite impressive.
I'm really impressed because, there were all these conversations that we used to have before that Nigerians don't really believe in mental health. Say, take the person to church, go and take paracetamol. Can't you see what your neighbor is, Do the other people have two heads? That kind of stuff. So it's real now and people are taking notice of it.
Yeah. Especially what I will refer to the elite class of, I wouldn't want to even use the word elite. I would use the word the enlightened class. So you have more and more people being comfortable to talk about. I mean, back in training, one of my teachers used to say, until we have a face to mental health, until people come out and say, me too, I have gone through my own share of depression, I've been diagnosed with bipolar, the stigma will like threaten people seeking proper treatment. So today we have people coming out and saying, I've been diagnosed with bipolar, on social media, especially, like I said, especially young people. And it's making the conversation a bit lighter to have in the public space.
Well, I mean, a part of me, and this is a terrible part, I'm ashamed to admit it. I just think some of it, is part of this look at me kind of exhibitionism. going on Instagram saying, I have men. Yeah. It's so almost trendy. Yeah. I mean, if Meghan Markle and Henry, Prince Henry or Harry are coming out about talking, it's almost like, this is my latest shoe kind of thing. I have got mental health issues, you know. How much of this is real and how much of this is posing?
You know, funny you say that, because I do agree with you. In clinical practice, we have people coming up and saying, I think I have ADD, that's attention deficit disorder. And it kind of sounds like, okay, me too. It's not like you really have it, but since everybody's having a mental illness now and it's like trending, I need to look for one to, you know, to identify.
I need a hook.
So you have people just coming up in the clinic and saying, I think I'm also suicidal. I'm like, please, let's be serious here. But mental illness is a serious issue. Let's not downplay.
Because, I mean, what I'm hearing is that, but what I'm hearing now is that this is real in Nigeria now. This is really, especially young people taking their own lives, which is something we never used to see so much.
I wouldn't say it didn't. I don't think it never existed. So that's another. The beautiful part of social media is that these things have always been there, but they've always been hush hush. People don't talk about it, and people kind of hide it. So now it's out there. I would not say the rates are higher, but I think the awareness is much higher. Right. So it looks as if the incidences or the prevalence has increased, but it's really more of the awareness has increased, not the prevalence.
Right. So, I mean, I'm glad you say that, because one is hearing now that, the rate of suicide, because you hear about parents whose children, and especially children who are schooled abroad, or this guy has everything going for him. Why did he do this? Like when exams are coming or they're in Oxford. And it seems to be like one demographic in particular seem to be getting it more. Is that true, or is just anecdotal?
No, it's not true. So it depends on your point of view in terms of the circle you find yourself. So it will seem as if there's an increased rate in the circle you find yourself, but from the point of a provider, mental health provider, I would say it cuts across social class, it cuts across ethnicity, it cuts across religious lines and all of that. It cuts across. It's just what we do see is that the presentation may differ. So for instance, substance abuse is substance abuse regardless of social class, but the type of drug being used in various groups will differ. So one group may be smoking more of what they call a form of weed. So it's like everyone smokes weed, but I mean in different
they
levels.
Might be going for skunk or whatever.
Yes, exactly. I don't want to indulge you. I don't want to encourage you to, you know, I don't want to call names.
No, so, believe me, I think I'm past that age now. I haven't sown my oats by now, I think, even my legs would take me to sow any oats. So. It's such an interesting way to talk about mental health that we're it's like gallows humor, isn't it? We're talking about it, but able to deal with it in a lighthearted manner. And it's I think it's an entry into it without being all doom and gloom. So what kinds of presentations are you seeing now? Is it more of drug addiction? Is it depression? Is it eating disorders? What are you seeing?
Well, in Nigeria, the presentation still largely remains. So I would say that it depends on the setting. I've been privileged and blessed to work in core psychiatric settings and also to work in general settings. So in the general settings, you will have people present a lot with things like anxiety, depression, and something that is called somatoform disorders, particularly adults. Also among young people, you will have people present a lot with anxiety and some form of depression.
Anxiety.
Because mental, yes, anxiety, that's true. And nowadays we're seeing things like social anxiety. Those are things that I would say in the course of my training earlier, we didn't used to really see those things. But now we have people struggling with some level of social anxiety. You see that in the general
practice. Sorry, can you just, I'm terribly sorry to interrupt.
No problem.
But this, I find this really interesting and fascinating. Social anxiety in Nigeria?
Yeah.
In what context would you say?
So I think what's happening here, because I jokingly always say that, you see, culture is said to be an acquired thing, not necessarily an inherent thing. In other words, now we have kids in Nigeria because the level of exposure and the thank God for data, thank God for the internet. So we have people who have acquired Western culture, even though they are Nigerians or they live here in Africa. So some of the things that in the past will be referred to as cultural psychiatric presentations are beginning to be seen in our own culture because we have acquired the Western culture. So you have people with social anxiety, especially the pressure to perform that's upon young people. Now, understand that mental health issues begin to appear at late adolescence. That's when majority of mental health issues right. begin to arise. And that's because there is a biological explanation to that. Because at that point, the brain development really is at the point where the emotional part of the brain is being formed. So a lot of emotional issues begin to arise at that point. So people that you would ordinarily think they should be, I mean, from good homes, balanced homes and all that, yet they still come down with having issues with self-esteem, having issues with yes, and all of that.
Wow.
So it still plays out, you know, it still plays out. I think the why is still something that we're still trying to fully understand, but it sometimes is not also far-fetched from all of the pressures that is required of the child. So children also go through stress. That's the truth. Parents often think that children don't have any form of stress. Like, I'm providing all the money for you. I'm working so hard to make sure you have everything. But then there's so much pressure to meet up with things as simple as just some other child on TikTok doing something wonderful, and the child feels like, me too, but I can't, or something, and all of that pressure. So sometimes those things just play out on why people have and develop anxieties.
So in terms of just very rough percentages, in terms of very, very sort of rough percentages, is the bulk of the problem, what percentage is due to drug addiction, and what sort of is that like 50% of what you're seeing in young people, and maybe not so young people?
So the rates in drug abuse has gone up, and I mean, according to the 2018, which is like the most elaborate report on drug abuse, Nigeria has a very high rate. I think we have a rate of about 14%, which is against the regular 5% in most other
countries.
Yeah, most other nations in terms of drug abuse. Yeah, so we have a lot of cases of drug abuse among young people, particularly between the ages of, I think 20, about that, 20 to 30, you have a lot of that. And most times, many people start at much earlier age, like 16.
Gosh.
So many people, the average years it takes for most parents to find out that their child is abusing is about 4 or 5 years after. So
before they find out?
Yes, most parents, the average time it comes to the awareness of most parents is like the child that must have been abusing. So most parents will discover when the child is in college. But most of them have started while they were in secondary schools. It's quite rampant.
Gosh. Yes. And I don't know what you as a practitioner What do you see? What are the demographics of the people, like this drug abuse? Is it the well-off, the middle classes, or people who are struggling?
Well, according to the data we have, the data says that funny enough, you have more of these cases in private schools as compared to the public schools. So one would say that among the well-off, it's not far-fetched. Yeah. I mean, the sellers, the dealers, as they refer to them, usually position themselves in, it's a business. So a dealer will go somewhere where he will make more money. So it just targets. And there is a pattern. So I think I need to put this out there.
Right.
There's a pattern I also see. So they sell this idea to you, the child, that so I see quite a number of children from well-off homes because they are struggling with their identity. They sell off this pattern that, you know, you need to do these things to be among, to feel like the happening person.
To be cool.
And you watch the videos and all of that. The videos, I mean, the music videos, these things have been displayed there. They are the people you refer to as the people they celebrate. Are people who, you know, they show now on their videos, all those kind of things. And I dare say that to the uninitiated, you are just watching a music video. Yeah. But to the initiated, the lightings, the cups they hold, the purple lights and all that, those things are indicative of the experiences you have when under the influence.
Even the words that they use are like signals.
So, also all around, that's why awareness is very important.
What about the role of the church and the mosque? Because as a Nigerian parent, we make so much about, you know, I beg, if I have problems, let me take my child to church. That will solve the problems. How effective is this as either to save the child who's already in drugs or to keep them away from it? Or it's just peripheral, or it's wishful thinking on our part?
Well, personally, I would say that it's proper that as we get more enlightened, because in the past, people have wrongfully approached it as strictly a spiritual problem, and then it just gets worse because they are not treating addiction, especially if we talk about addiction. Addiction is beyond just a moral issue. It's literally a medical issue.
Yeah.
So the person may start out choosing to take the drug, but at some point, they lose there's a compulsion. So if you treat it like a medical condition, you are likely going to get better results.
Yeah.
So my general advice would be, I mean, go seek proper treatment, not just take to a religious place and do only religion. There's nothing wrong with that because it has its effect, and it's research has shown that some level of faith has a protective factor in your mental health, but I think it's all about balance
and also sort of going back on it, you know, because presumably if you have some sort of religion or change and have some sort of faith, you choose different friends.
Exactly.
And then hopefully your friends will not lead
So it's protective.
Lead us not into temptation.
Amen.
Amen. And but what about things like eating disorders? Are those ones just Oyibo issues?
Well, you know, they're not quite common here. But we are beginning to see such cases, because like I said, culture is acquired, not necessarily something you are born with, you know. So because we are acquiring the Western culture, so we're beginning to have people present with, but they are really few and far between in Nigeria.
Far between.
Yeah.
Because by the time you starve and only Indomie is available, eating disorders are just not on your radar right now.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to take a different angle because it's such an issue that it's close to people and they don't want to open about it. And I'm just thinking that maybe if we make it a joke of it, but make it a lighthearted thing and just normalize it a bit.
Yeah, that's
normalize it and put it into conversation. Then the stigma and the accessibility will at least diminish. So I'm thinking, if I was a parent or I was a person with issues, what do I do first? I mean, assuming I now know, I have a child that's got issues. Who do I call? What's the first thing I can do? Walk me through the process. And I'm in Lagos, or I'm in Abeokuta, or I'm in Kano, or I'm in Abeokuta. What shall I do?
Well, I mean, Google is your friend. So start out with trying to get information, because so you can make an informed decision. Then the second thing is reach out to a professional. And
what do I put in the search engine? I'm really nervous at this.
So whatever you think the problem is, so refuses to eat or stays all by himself
in his room.
You know, always afraid or always suspicious of everyone else. Or I mean, is always moody, always crying. You know. Put out something there. But if that is like too much work, reach out to a professional. Reach out to a medical doctor first, a general medical doctor.
Okay, not necessarily a psychiatric person.
If you can, because sometimes it takes a while
to even identify the right person.
Yes, and to even agree that this is a mental illness, because usually what we hear is that he's just to himself. Or it's not aggressive. I'm wondering, what do you,
you hear that?
Why do you have to add it's not aggressive, you know? Yeah. So reach out to your medical doctor, your family physician, and he may point you in the right direction, you know. But I always like to encourage people that when you meet a professional, when you meet a psychiatrist, for instance, be open to receive information. And so I want to put out a distinction.
Right.
So what you get on the internet is mere information. But when you come to a professional, you have a mixture of information and experience.
Right.
So I can hear what you say, and then from my experience, put it all together and give you the best solutions. So so be open, because nowadays, because we have so much information out there, sometimes people think they know exactly what which is good, nothing wrong with that, but just be open. That's all I will say. Be open to hear what the professional has got to say about the situation.
What about counseling and therapy? Where does one actually access that, either for the child or as a family, or, you know, where do you start with that?
Well, I would say that mental health all over the world is a field that has a lot of challenge in terms of access to care all over the world. Mm. And Nigeria is not an exemption, or there's no special peculiarity about Nigeria.
Yeah.
If I use Nigeria, in Nigeria, we have majority of the focus in Lagos, and then you have the professionals sparsely distributed in the other states. But the internet is there to kind of find the closest person. But please, not just people on Instagram, just everyone wants to talk mental health and put themselves out there, you know, and all of that. So access to care, I mean, there are public hospitals, there are private facilities, they're out there now. And one good thing that I think the whole pandemic has brought upon us is we have leveraged more on the use of technology. So now people are not necessarily limited to geographical location to access care. I mean, you can be anywhere and just go online. As long as you have internet and you have a phone, you could access care. And I think that in itself has made even the cost of care cheaper than
come down. Because that was the next thing I was going to say. I have a friend who has a facility, or has two different facilities, one for the well-off and a free one for the not-so-well-off, as a charity. And because accessing care, especially inpatient care, must be horrendously expensive for, you know, the ordinary man in on the street in Nigeria.
Yeah, yes, it is.
So how do they fund it?
Well, like your friend does, I mean, sometimes you have to do a bit of both. Get some form of charity organization like an NGO, and that way people can fund people having access to care. And then there's the public hospital too.
How good are they? How effective are those facilities?
If you talk about effectiveness, I think they are effective in delivering the result. I think the only, if I want to be very sincere, I know if some of them hear me, they may roast me out to dry. But the truth is that I think it's the process to getting the result that may be not so pleasant. So what I mean by that is that the process sometimes entails the environment, you know, and the process also involves how you are treated, you know, in terms of respect and dignity for the patient.
And empathy.
And all. Not because the professionals don't want to do that, but in a typical, I was speaking with, I work currently fully in the private sector, and I was speaking with one of our consultants who comes to consult for us, and she said to me that we have to see about 80 patients, and we have about that number, 80 patients, she said 80, and we have barely like 5 hours to do that.
Gosh.
So do the maths. I mean, do the maths. So there's really, not because they want to be insensitive, but you really don't have the luxury of time to be overly sensitive. But in terms of the results, when I say the result, the outcome, like, okay, I was ill, and now I'm good, and the result is good, it's fantastic, you know. But the process, and the process is very important, because if I went through a lot to get to the other side, I will hate the treatment.
Yeah.
I may not be very receptive to the treatment, even though the outcome was good at the end, but I would be so focused on the process, like the time it took me to get to see the doctor, the way I was spoken to, the way I was treated, blah, blah, blah. I think those are the challenges, but we are working on them, and that's all I can say. We are working on them. It's not easy, but we're working on them.
I mean, what I read somewhere that, to be honest, Nigerian centers, or I don't even know what the word is, they have very good outcomes for patients compared to, it's comparable to wherever you get abroad. Like you said, the dignity and the circumstances or the care might not be as plush.
Yeah,
but the results are actually very good.
Yeah, that's correct.
Considering what they have to work with, and that is impressive, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what do you think about this? And I think this is a bit of a hot potato.
Okay,
the decriminalization of cannabis, because it seems to be the latest thing now.
Well,
as a professional.
As a professional, and I always have this 4 points. So we say it's legal. And from the side of a provider, one of the reasons why people abuse drugs, one of the reasons is because they really do not know the level of damage drugs can. They underestimate how much damage drugs can cost.
Right.
So there's something called the unintended consequence. So I often say to my patients that in your wildest dream, I'm sure you never imagined when you started out that you were going to spend this amount of months in a rehab facility. You just thought it was for fun. Yeah. You never imagined that, I mean, one day you will literally be fighting for your life to function. You know, so, and that's because the person did underestimated the damage drugs can cause. So also with weed, you know, people often say, oh, I've been using weed for many years, nothing happened to me. But it's a fact, a statistical fact, a research-based fact, that the use of weed increases the chances by 6 times the chances of having a schizophrenic illness. Doesn't mean everybody's going to have schizophrenia having smoked weed, but just the same way, not everyone who smokes cigarettes is going to come down with cancer, but the risk is there. So there is that risk. Now they say, okay, it's medicinal and all of that.
herbal. Yes, it's herbal.
Herbal doesn't make it. Not all herbs are healthy. That's the truth. And then they say it's medicinal. The medicinal part is the CBC. But what is sold on the street is high in THC, which is which has propensity to cause psychosis, as against the CBC component, which has the therapeutic part. So those things, and when they say, okay, it increases your performance and all that, I've never seen someone who cannot swim smoke weed and then can suddenly know how to swim. So that doesn't happen.
That's one way of putting it.
Yes, so your creativity is... I always say that you are giving too much credit to the weed. You have to be creative and then smoke weed and be better at what you do, but not just that you don't have anything. But you can still achieve all of that without it. So, I mean, people can argue back and forth about that, but from a professional standpoint, I think that has just... And what it has done in our society, even though it's not legal in Nigeria, but what it has done in our society, it has made more young people argue and give reasons why they should use it.
It's no longer black and white. They now have
reasons.
Information. Yeah, reasons to argue with you. You can't just say, look, you're gonna fall, you know, you're gonna go off the rails. They'll say, but this person didn't. And
yeah. But it's a gateway drug. That's one part. So
it's a gateway drug. It is. You know, everybody thinks they have the willpower to resist it.
So they say until they come over.
Well, when they come a cropper, it's a really sad thing, because I've seen quite a few young people.
Yeah.
With so much promise. So much promise. And because they're starting so much younger now.
Yeah.
When the brain is still being formed.
Yeah. That's true.
It's a horrible thing. So I've really learned a lot. And it's actually good to know from a practitioner on the field what is the myth and what is the truth and how much of what we read, or, you know, God forbid that we have an issue or you have somebody that has an issue, how do you start? And it's interesting that you said go to your doctor, any doctor. It doesn't have to be a mental health
psychiatrist. Yeah,
yes, that would be that. I would never have thought of that, you know. I mean, and even when I typed into Google, as you say, Google is my friend, but what is my keyword that I'm going to put in? How do I find a practitioner or something like that? But it's interesting that coming from your end, it seems obvious, but as when you're in a blue funk and you're panicking, how do you know what to do? So I really enjoyed our conversation. Now, one or two questions before you go. I know we've probably run over time, but one or two things from you. When we started this podcast, you were singing at the beginning. What is your favorite song at the moment? What is your favorite song at the
moment? My favorite song at the moment, it's a song by what's his name? Chandler. I keep forgetting his first name, but it's called Jairi.
Is he a Nigerian artist?
Chandler Moore, that's his name. Chandler Moore. No, it's an American.
I will be Googling him. Google is my friend. Yes. I will be checking
Google
him
is
out.
Your friend. Yes,
Google
Chandler
is my
Moore.
Friend. I'm going to be checking Chandler Moore. Okay. And what genre? What genre is it? Is it gospel?
Well, he does gospel. Okay. I mean, it's got me hooked right now.
Uh-huh. So that was what you were humming when we started the
No, I can't. I'm always doing that. I've always been doing that for since I was in secondary school. People know me like the doctor that sings. I mean, it's just
But that's such good energy. You know, you've got such positive energy. It's. I mean, we were talking about a very heavy subject, but we were just, you know, chatting and smile, laughing, and it's counterintuitive, but it actually makes it a bearable subject. Yeah. It would have been. Not so bearable otherwise. So, yeah. And what are you watching on DSTV or Netflix?
Well, I watched this cartoon. It's called Voltron. I think that's what I'm watching right now. That's what catches my attention right now.
Okay, that's really good. Do you watch it with the kids or you just watch it yourself?
No, I drive them away. They can't. I mean, just, well, sometimes I do.
This is your space.
Yes, this is my space. But I really love watching, especially with my older daughter. We kind of love superhero things together. My younger daughter really doesn't care for such things.
So interesting. You haven't really grown out of the superhero cartoon thing.
No. Not for now. My job is very serious, so I can't be serious. I need to have light moments.
Absolutely. So talking of light moments is my very last question. Can you tell me a funny joke? Okay, maybe not so funny, but at least a joke.
Okay. So I must confess, I'm not that much of a comedian kind of thing. But
mine is even worse. So just give it a go.
Okay. So this guy comes to visit the facility. And then a psychiatric facility. And so he goes around with the psychiatrist and on a tour and is amused by the different kind of patients that he sees. And he notices that some of them really come across like completely normal. And then he says to the psychiatrist that, how do you know who is normal and how do you know who to admit? How can you tell? So he said, oh, that's easy. We do something called the bathtub test. So we fill the bathtub and then we give the individual a spoon, a cup and a bucket, and we tell them to empty the bathtub.
The bathtub, yes.
Yeah. So the guy responds, oh, that's easy. So clearly, the guy who takes the spoon or the woman who takes the spoon, whoever takes the spoon or the cup to empty the bathtub, clearly is not normal. And the person who takes the bucket to empty the bathtub is normal. And then the doctor says to him, no, actually, the person who just pulls the plug from the bathtub is the normal
person.
That
was good.
So,
that is
so
really
he says
good.
To him that, so which bed would you now want? Because since you chose the bucket, the one close to the window, or because you ain't going out of this place.
Yes, you ain't leaving here soon. Oh, thank you so much, Dr. I really, really enjoyed that. I thank you. I've learned so much. And is there any way people can get hold of you?
On Twitter and on Instagram, I go by at I am PDoc. That's P. DOC. So I'm even unserious on those things. That's just
P-Doc.
Yeah. So, but P-Doc.
Twitter.
Twitter.
And are you on Instagram?
Yeah, on Instagram too. So Twitter and Instagram at I am P-Doc. I am P-Doc.
I am. That's IAMPDoc.
Yeah.
Okay. P-D-O-C. And what about email if people need to reach you?
DrEdebi@gmail.com.
So that's DR or is it DOCTOR?
No, DOCTOREDEBI@gmail. Okay. That's my doctor spelled in full and my name Edebi.
@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Edebi. And listeners, I hope you've got some value from this and learned a lot and you have some practical steps. We hope there's nobody that you know, but if you do think somebody can benefit from this, Dr. Edebi is available. And before you do that, can you just please give us a 5-star rating and share our podcast with your friends, wherever you get your podcast from? We'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Thank you. Take care. Bye.